It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We've received no formal or even informal notification of anything. Kim Jong-un had said previously that he understands the need and the utility of the United States and the Republic of Korea continuing in its joint exercises. They're exercises that are legal. They're planned well in advance.
They're negotiating over leverage and things they want to have on the table. Now, our diplomats are getting some insight into where North Korea is really heading.
I think not doing military exercises would actually be a show of good faith on our part. Doesn't change anything permanently, but delaying that until after talks I think would be a good idea.
Sandy Rios with you. That was all the talk yesterday. I mean, all the talk, that somehow North Korea, Kim Jong-un, were going to change their minds about the talks and Trump would be embarrassed and he was so eager for it that he was going to make a mistake. You fill in the blanks of what you think they might have said. But actually, North Korea is, we know, because of our satellite capabilities, dismantling right now as we speak their nuclear program. They're dismantling it. And overnight, things changed as they often do. Many people are speculating, and I think this is probably likely true, that Kim Jong-un was criticized in country for seeming to be too soft in response to President Donald Trump, so he had to kind of rattle the saber and act like he was upset and threaten or say things that might indicate that he would, you know, go a different direction. But Griff Jenkins had a report this morning early, and I want you to hear it. Here it is.
Are they negotiating, or is this a real threat to scrap the summit? Overnight, North Korea's vice foreign minister issuing a statement through state-run media saying, if the U.S. is trying to drive us into a corner to force our unilateral nuclear abandonment, we will no longer be interested in such dialogue and cannot but reconsider our proceeding to the DPRK-U.S. summit. This after the North canceled a key meeting with South Korea and threatened withdrawal over what they called provocative military ruckus as the U.S. and South Korea maintain military drills dubbed Max Thunder, which the Pentagon calls routine annual training, in the State Department, warning against getting ahead of ourselves here.
I would not get ahead of ourselves here. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. This news just came out. We need to verify it, get additional information on that, but we're going forward and planning our meetings next month.
But the developments drew immediate criticism from former CIA Director John Brennan, who accused the president of being enamored with a fire-aim-ready policymaking process that is fraught with pitfalls as well as potential disasters. So here's where we are, guys. Talks still set for June 12th. The White House says they'll continue preparations unless they hear differently directly from North Korea. A prediction here this morning. Stay tuned to Twitter. We may learn more directly from the president.
Yes, so there you go. And so it's still on, and that's not a surprise. It was much ado about nothing. And I always, you know, laugh in a sort of sardonic, unfunny way when I hear John Brennan's name, because remember, John Brennan was the CIA director under President Barack Obama. John Brennan, who I often say and will often repeat, because I want you to understand every time you hear his name, he was a dangerous person put in charge of the CIA. He is the one who's been leading the deep state against President Trump. John Brennan was the guy that voted for the Communist Party candidate in the American presidential election in 1980 and actually bragged openly about it to potential employees of the CIA, laughing that you can even have voted for the Communist Party candidate. I did that. John Brennan, not to be trusted, dangerous character. So whatever he says, really probably the opposite is true. And so that's the story on North Korea, at least for today's news cycle. Now, lots of things have been happening in Israel as a result of the ceremony of us opening our embassy in Jerusalem on Monday. David Lee Miller has a report of what's happening on the border of the Gaza Strip. Let's listen.
Demonstrators returned to the Gaza border again today, though in fewer numbers. At least two Palestinians died and more than 130 were wounded in clashes with Israeli troops. Palestinians on the West Bank in Ramallah and Bethlehem also took to the streets. The Israeli military was bracing for larger protests to mark the anniversary of Israel's founding, or what Palestinians referred to as the Nakba, the Great Catastrophe. Hamas, which is in control of Gaza, called on protesters to breach the border fence, despite warnings from Israel that there would be deadly consequences. Instead of protesting, many Gaza residents found themselves at the funerals for the 60 people who died in yesterday's demonstrations, coinciding with the relocation of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. More than 2,000 were wounded. Hospitals in Gaza are unable to cope. Medicine, blood, and doctors are in short supply, making it difficult to treat patients.
We received almost 500 injuries, while the capacity of the emergency department is 20 beds.
The Israeli military released video of Monday's violence and says its actions were in self-defense. Israel says some of the demonstrators are Hamas operatives. In the video, Palestinians can be seen trying to cut the border fence. In one instance, the military says it opened fire when militants tossed pipe bombs and grenades at soldiers. At the UN, Ambassador Nikki Haley came to Israel's defense.
I asked my colleagues here in the Security Council, who among us would accept this type of activity on your border? No one would. No country in this chamber would act with more restraint than Israel has.
The Palestinian UN ambassador also addressed the council, asking diplomats how many Palestinians have to die before you take action. And in another development, Palestinians say they are recalling their U.S. ambassador in protest over the relocation of the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem.
So let's get this straight. That's David Lee Miller. Let's get this straight. The Palestinians are trying to, perpetrating violence on the border of Israel. They're throwing whatever they have, rocks. They're throwing also explosive devices. They're charging the border. And so 60 are killed. Now, no one's happy about that. But you know what? When you charge the border or you try to invade another person, another country's territory, and you've been warned through flyers, don't do it. Don't do it. It's going to be dangerous. We are upping our security and you might be killed. Don't do that. And you do it anyway and you get killed. And then you blame the reason that you did that was because America opened their embassy in Jerusalem, which has been the centuries, millennial seat of home of the Jewish people. Yeah, but I mean, but it's their fault. It's the Jews, it's the Israelis, it's their fault that those people died who tried to violently protest at the border of another country. Yeah, so that's how this goes, and that's the logic. In fact, it's really interesting because just to give you an idea of how twisted this gets, Andrea Mitchell on NBC or MSNBC made a statement yesterday that I just think you should. This is what the left thinks. Let's listen to Andrea.
It was extraordinary. I've never seen anything like that. Even the strongest supporters of Israel in administrations, Republican and Democratic, would at that point say, be proportional and be cautionary. And there was no restraint. Israel now is so empowered because of the administration's enmity with Iran that they now feel clearly that they can do anything.
And Andrea, we're looking at the split screen right now between what was going on, as I said, and what looked like a VIP tent at the Belmont Stakes. And yeah. What was happening is over 50 Palestinians were killed.
And you know the real loser here? The Palestinians are losers. They've had dreadful leadership for decades. We all know that. And it's not just Hamas. It's both branches of the Palestinian government. Abbas is a disgrace by now. So they've been disempowered. But the real loser is one of our strongest allies, never mentioned by anyone, King Abdullah of Jordan, who has a majority Palestinian country, who is going to be overwhelmed. The Saudi Arabia and the UAE, they're not going to care if in this grand scheme of Jared Kushner's, the Palestinians are lost in the shuffle. But King Abdullah will lose his country. He is completely vulnerable and at risk. And the fact is that they are now sort of mouthing generalities in the Sunni Arab Persian Gulf world about the Palestinians whom they don't really care about. But those on the front lines really care. Yep. It's just, to me, appalling that we have no vision at all. We got nothing for it. No pullback on settlements. There's no balancing act here.
I don't know where to start, but I'll try. So now Andrea is complaining that Israel is so empowered that they actually protected their border. And then they show a split screen, and of course you couldn't see that. It was the ceremony on the left, and on the right it was the rioting on the border and people getting killed. And that to them is Israel's fault. And how horrible. Again, it's people trying to do violence at Israel's border. Israel's protecting their border, and it's Israel's fault that those people died. That's the way the logic goes. And then she says that removing the American capital, the American embassy in Israel to Jerusalem, is a grand scheme of Jared Kushner. Really? It's been American foreign policy for 20 years, but we just haven't ever done it. But it's a grand scheme, of course, of Jared Kushner. And she finds it appalling. And then she says that we didn't get anything for it. What is she talking about, we? No pullback on the settlements. She's talking about the pressure on Israel to pull back Jewish settlements, which was in the news a lot. It's what Barack Obama forced them to do. So that's we. Who's the we? Who is we, Andrea? I'd really like to know who we is. And so that's the response to that ceremony yesterday. There's a lot more to say about it. You know that Dr. Jeffress was asked to pray at the ceremony. I wish we had time to play his prayer. We don't. But he was on with Shannon Bream because he was roundly criticized. Mitt Romney said, Robert Jeffress says, you can't be saved by being a Jew, and Mormonism is a heresy from the pit of hell. He said the same about Islam. Such a religious bigot should not be giving the prayer that opens the United States Embassy in Jerusalem. That's the statement by candidate for Senate in Utah, Mitt Romney. And so then he was on, Dr. Jeffress was on with Shannon last night. Let's listen to what they had to say.
You were a big part of the ceremonies today, and there were folks who were not happy about that. Mitt Romney, among them, tweeting out that you should not have had that place representing the United States there based on previous comments that you've made about Mormons, about Jews, about other religions. The ADL tweeting this today. Today is a day of celebration as the U.S. Embassy opens in Jerusalem. The choice of Pastor Robert Jeffress to offer a prayer sends exactly the wrong message. Jeffress has a history of bigoted comments about LGBTQ people, Jews, Muslims, Christians, and other religions. Your response?
Well, first of all, I've never said anything derogatory about the Jewish people. I talked about today the oneness that we share in worshiping the same God in the scriptures. But Shannon, I want to be clear. I'm not a bigot. I'm not an extremist. But I do, without apology, embrace the most foundational belief of historic Christianity. And that is that faith alone in Jesus Christ is the exclusive way to heaven. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. Now, people can disagree with Jesus' words. Millions of them do. But the fact that I and hundreds of millions of evangelical Christians around the world believe what Jesus said about the way to heaven does not make us a bigot. This is not a surprising statement. The fact is, this has been the teaching of the church for 2,000 years.
Well, you can imagine when Dr. Jeffress took the podium at that ceremony and prayed in Jesus' name, it was probably really hard for a lot of the Jews sitting in the audience. But I also think, I know because of my Jewish friends in Israel, Israeli friends, that they there has been a kind of a softening in regard to Christians because they have seen what friends, evangelical Christians, have been to Israel. And so they're beginning to be able to tolerate the mention of Jesus by these evangelical Christians more than they could, say, 10 years ago, really. But that was Dr. Jeffress' prayer, and that was his statement on Shannon. And God bless Dr. Jeffress. God bless him. This is a controversial viewpoint that we hold, that Jesus said he was the way, the truth, and the life, and no man comes to him, and it comes to the Father, except through him. That is what we believe because Jesus said it. And there'll be a price to be paid for all of us for believing that. So God bless Dr. Jeffress for exampling to all of us what's really the central part of the gospel. I'll be right back after this.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work?
Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful. But then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared. And the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works. And it's so easy to get your questions answered too. So why not? You can call right now. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
The American Family Association invites you to a very special gathering of AFA friends from across America this fall at the Big Cedar Lodge in the Ozarks. The AFA retreat will be a relaxing time of fellowship and inspiration. Speakers include Sandy Rios, Dr. Ray Pritchard, Todd Starnes, Abraham Hamilton III, and Ed Battagliano, and Dennis Jernigan will lead us in worship. Experience all of this in a beautiful setting that dates back to the 1920s, built originally to be a wilderness retreat for a prominent Missouri family. We hope you'll join us October 8th through the 11th at the rustic Big Cedar Lodge, just south of Branson on Table Rock Lake. It promises to be a refreshing time of worship, teaching, fellowship, and fun. To register or for more information, visit afafoundation.net. Seating is limited, so register today. Hope to see you there.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Ruth Benjamin of Marshall, Illinois, says the secret to a long life is bacon and potatoes. Now, before you turn off your radio, hear me out. Miss Benjamin knows what she's talking about. She just turned 109. Miss Benjamin tells WGN she eats potatoes every day, mashed, baked, French fried, you name it. She also loves bacon and sauerkraut. So did Susanna Jones. She lived to be 116. Miss Jones swore by bacon, four strips every morning, along with grits and eggs. But there's a bit more to the story, according to the medical experts. Dr. Jim Turner says Miss Benjamin never drank, never smoked, had a wonderful marriage, loving family. The good doctor says happiness is the key to her longevity, not necessarily bacon. But if happiness leads to a long life and bacon makes you happy, well, I say enjoy a few extra slices. Just double up on the cholesterol meds. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Calling on Congress to secure our borders, support our border agents, stop sanctuary cities, and shut down policies that release violent criminals back into our communities. We don't want it any longer. We've had it. Enough is enough. Recently, MS-13 gang members called for the assassination of New York City police officers so the gang could, quote, take back the streets. We are the ones who are taking back the streets.
That was President Trump speaking at a law enforcement officers. It's Police Week in D.C., and so it was whatever their big celebration meal was, he was speaking. And here's the thing. We've had 100,000 U.S. border agents have arrested over 100,000 illegal border crosses in March and April. It has grown exponentially. And, of course, the spring, we're just in the middle of spring. It's going to get only worse, and that's why the president is getting more exercised. An announcement was made yesterday that they are considering putting migrant children on military bases. because they have so many of them, trying to figure out what to do. Here we are again. Here we are again. And why is that happening? Well, I'll tell you. One of the problems that I've mentioned, but it's been a while, you haven't heard me talk about this in a long time. The Department of Homeland Security Secretary is a woman named Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen. Now, you've seen her on television. You probably said, well, she sounds pretty good at times. But what we knew at the time that she was appointed was that she was a never-Trumper. She was not on his team. She never was. There were tremendous warnings about this. And yet, it looks as though John Kelly, the chief of staff, persuaded President Trump to hire her. Let me just, if I could explain this briefly, because it's too complex, I know that. There are still so many never-Trumpers serving in the White House, and one of them is the guardian of hiring and firing. He is a former Boehner operative. I could tell you his name. His name is Johnny Stefano. Not that that means anything to you, but I'm just telling you, I'll put flesh on the bones. He is blocking good nominees, trashing really good people, their resumes going in the trash can, and hiring people that are not loyal to this president. It is still a problem. So Kirstjen Nielsen is the director of Homeland Security. Let me just read to you a portion. Politico even reported just last week that associates of Trump make the case that she's a closeted never-Trumper. Tom Ridge, by the way, remember the Bush Homeland Security Secretary praised Nielsen as a Homeland Security veteran and a patriot during your nomination process. And of course, Tom Ridge was one of 95 Republican establishments who signed this letter excoriating Trump and not supporting him in the 2016 election. Nielsen's friend, former Bush official Frances Townsend, praised her as well at the time she was nominated, saying she was tough as nails. But Frances Townsend signed a letter in which she called Trump so utterly unfit for office. These are the kinds of people that Kirstjen Nielsen is friends with. Sources tell Politico, told Politico that Trump, like his advisors, is increasingly put off by Nielsen's running of DHS, where illegal immigration has soared at the U.S.-Mexican border for months. A former White House official says Trump feels as though Chief of Staff John Kelly forced Nielsen on him for the DHS job, prompting Trump to want to rescind her nomination after he found out that she had a history of working for President George W. Bush. Now, the problem with working with President Bush was that President Bush was all about amnesty and, you know, some sort of what they call comprehensive immigration reform, which was, you know, code word for amnesty for millions of illegal immigrants in this country. So you know that there was a dust-up between the president and Kirstjen Nielsen last week, and allegedly she thought about quitting. Many of us hope that she will quit. But that reminds me then of something that's very relevant. In the House, we have the Senate. Right now, we have this hearing going on about Gina Haspel, who is being nominated to be the head of the CIA. And I'm probably the only person you heard, I'm guessing, say this is not a good idea. Gina Haspel is the pick of John Brennan, who I just rehearsed his record to you in the first segment. He loves Gina Haspel. He's pushing Gina Haspel. We hear the same people saying how wonderful she is, like we heard how wonderful Bob Mueller was. Remember? Remember? And this is what we're hearing about Gina Haspel to lead the CIA. And I'm telling you, this is not a good idea. We just hope and pray that President Trump can clean house further to get rid of the people around him who are not his friends, who do not embrace his policies, don't embrace our policies, the people that the things that the American people wanted. They want strong borders. They want immigration enforcement. But we're not getting it. And let me read this article to you. This is at least a bit of it. I want to put this on our Facebook page because this is classic. It's written by Rachel Boulevard, who is a name you don't know, but she is deeply involved, has been in policy on the immigration efforts. And this is the title of it. It's Amnesty, the Rasputin of American Policy. And she's talking about this. When we talked to Congressman Dave Brat on Monday, you recall that we talked about this Queen of the Hill process, whereby a group of Republican House members, Will Hurd of Texas is one of the leaders, Jeff Denham of California, one of the others, have signed a discharge petition to bring a bill on the floor of the House that would legalize, some say, up to 17 million, among other things. Precious, no money for border wall, just, you know, what they want. And so Paul Ryan has feigned, you know, oh, no, he's not in favor of this. And so has Kevin McCarthy. They're not in favor of that. They've blustered about it, but they're doing nothing. In fact, let me read to you what Rachel has said about this. Though Speaker Ryan and House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy publicly have opposed the strategy, they're doing little to stop it. Their reticence could lead to what was heretofore an unthinkable outcome, a Republican House majority passing amnesty. The feigned helplessness from Ryan and McCarthy is disturbing on several levels. While it's true that GOP leadership has few options to stop dominoes from falling once the procedural wires are tripped, they do have access to the one powerful tool that makes Washington go around, political muscle. For evidence of this, look no further than the public flogging that outspoken conservatives have received from the Speaker's office in the past for the very sin that these 17 Republicans have now committed, opposing their leadership's priorities. Representative Mark Meadows was stripped of his subcommittee chairmanship for voting the wrong way. Other members were kicked out of their positions on Representative Steve Scalise's whip team by Steve Scalise's whip team for similar transgressions. Campaign checks controlled by the party organizations were halted, and corporate political action committees were told to close their coffers to members bold enough to openly disagree with leadership. While many of these heavy-handed measures occurred under Ryan's predecessor, Speaker Boehner, they were carried out by McCarthy and Scalise, both of whom are vying to take Ryan's place. It would be a troubling but telling portent for a future McCarthy or Scalise speakership if the Republicans associated with the amnesty strategy do not receive as much as a wrist slap for opposing their leadership's agenda. That's just a portion of this article. We're going to put it on our Facebook page. I hope that you will share it. That's why many of us are asking, begging, yea, verily, Jim Jordan to run for Speaker. Steve Scalise whipped and punished conservatives all the time. Kevin McCarthy did the same thing. And Paul Ryan, meanwhile, stood back and twiddled his thumbs and acted as though he was innocent, which is what he always does. He acts like he's not doing anything. Well, you know, you could say that he isn't, but he sure makes sure conservatives are punished roundly for the things that they do. And now it looks as though this Queen of the Hill process may, you know, they just need, I think the last count I had of this on Monday, I think they needed 7 more Republicans to get this thing passed. The idea is that they'll get these Republicans, this group of, 20 of them are... not sure what the number is, 20 or so, and they will vote with all the Democrats and they will pass an amnesty bill. That's how this is going to work. And so that's why Rachel calls it the Rasputin. Rasputin was that dreadful Russian Orthodox priest who, with a long black hair, just a wicked man who had incredible influence over Alexandra, the Tsarina of Russia. They tried to kill him several times, and he wouldn't die. That's why she's calling this amnesty bill the Rasputin. And let me just read this. Where shall I go next? I have so many things to tell you. I'm going to save that one for another time. But that's kind of what's happening. I have failed to talk about such an important story, and I think there's a lot more news about it, but Kim Strassel was on over the weekend on the weekend shows. Kim from the Wall Street Journal has been reporting on this, and I'm going to let her start this discussion. Let's listen.
Up until last week, all we knew was that House Intelligence Chairman Devin Nunes had initiated a new line of inquiry and was demanding new documents from the Department of Justice. But then, in their desire to make Chairman Nunes look bad and justify why they were not giving those documents, someone in the government leaked a lot of details about what was happening. It turns out he's asking about a top secret government source who has worked for the FBI and the CIA, who is a U.S. citizen, would seem to have some sort of entanglement with foreign intelligence agencies, or maybe is based overseas. And based on all those breadcrumbs and some reporting, I've got a pretty good sense of who it is. And it does look as though, indeed, there was an FBI attempt, a successful one, to basically go out and spy with a human asset on the Trump campaign. Remember, the FBI has been doggedly sticking with this story, that what initiated this counterintelligence probe was a tip that they got in July about this supposed drunken conversation of a junior campaign aide named George Papadopoulos. Well, if for any reason we find out that this person, this asset of theirs, was in fact surveilling or spying on the Trump campaign prior to that time, then they've got an issue, right? Because that's no longer their origin story. And they must have had something else that they were basing this on, whether it be the dossier or some other information that they were using as a reason to go out and surveil the Trump campaign.
All right, Kim did an excellent piece on this over the weekend, but so much more has been written since then, and I'm going to do my best to try to make this as simple as I know how to make it. It looks as though indications seem to be that the FBI did this elaborate setup to give themselves permission to go after President and at the time, nominee Donald Trump for alleged collusion. And the way it looks as though this worked, and now we have a name to this person that was paid by our government at least $400,000. His name is Stephen Halper. He's a dual U.S. UK citizen. Now, look, this is what we know so far. This thing is so complex. Who knows what other names may emerge, but this is the one we know now. Stephen Halper, it looks as though he contacted George Papadopoulos, just came out of the blue, and offered him $3,000 to write a paper on something, some political topic. Now, George is like 24, was maybe 24 at the time. And he claimed to be a Trump staffer, but you can imagine that at that age, he probably didn't have a major role, and he didn't. He was with I don't even know what his affiliation was, but he's just a kid. So Stephen Halper pays him $3,000 and also offers him a free trip to England to do what? Go to a meeting, do something. So you can imagine how thrilling that was. So George Papadopoulos does that. And at that meeting with Stephen Halper, allegedly, Stephen Halper, just out of the clear blue sky, tells George Papadopoulos that the Russians have come across a ton of Hillary Clinton email. Well, George is 24 years old, and, you know, we were all wondering about Hillary Clinton's email, and this is at the time. Now, who knows who released these DNC and John Podesta emails? Was it WikiLeaks who got them? Was it Russia? Who knows? If the FBI had actually investigated the DNC server rather than letting a private company go in and do it and claiming that they didn't go in and do it themselves. And then the private contractor announces it's the Russians. So that's at the basis of the FBI's statements on this. Okay, so nevertheless, go back in time and imagine that George Stephanopoulos is hearing this. And then they set up a meeting for George with an Australian diplomat and they're in a bar, and George Papadopoulos gets drunk, and he says to the Russian diplomat, who happens to be a Hillary Clinton Foundation donor, a major donor, "Did you know that the Russians had located lots of Hillary Clinton's email?" And there it's born. There it is, right there. That is the reason why the FBI said was their basis for saying that Donald Trump was colluding with the Russians, because a staffer or person associated with the campaign made this claim to this Australian diplomat, who promptly then reported it. But you see, it looks like, methinks, it's a setup. In fact, Clarice Feldman wrote a really interesting article on Stephen Halper and tracking the payments that were made to him It's got a name. Department of Defense Office of Net Assessment. And she tracks the kinds of payments they've made to other entities, and we find out that at one point they gave $11 million to a company who is, the president is best friends with Chelsea Clinton. And then she traces a whole bunch of them. Adam Lovinger, whose name you may or not may recognize, Adam's a good, strong conservative. He was a Trump appointee. He warned about such contracts. And he was stripped of his security clearance by James Baker with the FBI as a result of warning about what this Department of Defense slush fund was paying. And they paid, among other things, Stephen Halper at least $400,000. Was that payment for kind of helping the FBI start this little ball rolling on Russian collusion? You be the judge of that. I'm sure we're going to be hearing more about it. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. A new study examined tenured professorships at 51 of the top 60 liberal arts colleges listed in the U.S. News & World Report rankings. It found, save for the two military colleges, Democrat professors outnumber Republicans nearly 13-1. 40% of the surveyed colleges have zero Republican faculty. Higher academia has become monolithic ideologically. Perhaps this explains why young people often go to college with one worldview, only to return as card-carrying, socialist-leaning regressives.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Under God, an American Family Radio special celebrating our great nation and featuring the music of the Joyful Noise Quartet.
I'm just reminded today how this country was founded because there were Christians looking for a land where they could live out their Christian faith. We've been entrusted now to be guardians of this freedom.
Listen to Under God this Thursday afternoon, 2:30 Central on American Family Radio.
Hi, this is Sandy Rios. This year's annual AFA retreat will be held at the beautiful Big Cedar Lodge near Branson, Missouri. I'm happy to be a part of it along with Abraham Hamilton III, Dr. Ray Pritchard, Ed Vitagliano, and our worship leader, Dennis Jernigan. And I hope to see you there too, along with other supporters of the American Family Association.
Join us for the AFA retreat October 8th through the 11th. For more information or to register, visit afafoundation.net.
Hi, I'm J.J. Jasper. Do you know what a snail says riding on a turtle's back? Whee! That's how I feel about being at this year's Fishbowl Retreat. I'll be sharing some laughs and encouragement with you, and my wife Melanie will be speaking as well.
The annual AFA Pastors and Wife Fishbowl Retreat is coming October 9th through the 11th, and already the event is filling up. Our hosts will be Pastor Bert Harper of Exploring the Word and his wife Jan. And our guest speakers will be AFR morning personality J.J. Jasper and his wife Melanie. Come refresh, renew, and relax. The AFA Fishbowl Retreat will be held at Linden Valley Conference Center in Linden, Tennessee. Registration is limited to the first 35 couples. Register soon by calling 800-326-4543 extension 300 or visit repairingthefoundations.net.
Come join us at the annual AFA Fishbowl Retreat, October the 9th through the 11th.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un has begun throwing tantrums about the terms of his planned summit with President Donald Trump and the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula it's supposed to advance. Supposedly, he's upset at joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises and National Security Advisor John Bolton. The real reason the mask of Kim's charm offensive is slipping surely has more to do with the orders this puppet has received from his master, Communist China's dictator Xi Jinping. If not before, certainly from now on, Xi's interest in perpetuating the threat posed to us by his client will determine what, if anything, comes of U.S.-North Korean negotiations. If that's the case, there's no point to our legitimating Kim Jong-un, let alone propping up his horrifically repressive regime. And we're far better off knowing that now than discovering it later. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
All right, you know what? Yesterday were the primaries, and we've talked to the primaries in Pennsylvania, Idaho, Nebraska, and Pennsylvania. And so I just wanted to highlight a couple of the races that we talked about. You remember that what's at stake is Democrats need a net total of 23 to assume the House majority. And in Pennsylvania, because of redistricting, they could the Democrats actually could pick up five seats right there because the redistricting, of course, hurts Republicans and helps Democrats. And that's what happens when Democrats are in charge of a state or when Republicans are charged with a state. That's kind of what they do. So Let me tell you a little bit about what happened yesterday, just based on some of the races we talked about. In the Senate race, Bob Casey is the sitting senator. Bob, his father was a very famous pro-lifer, but Bob Casey is not, and totally flipped and kind of has, from my perspective, ruined his father's legacy with the last name. But he's the sitting sitting senator. Lou Barletta, who used to be the mayor of Hazleton, but he's been in Congress now for several years because of his really strong stand on immigration. Lou Barletta won the Republican primary yesterday and will face off with Bob Casey. So we'll see what happens with that. In Idaho, I told you that Raul Labrador, who was a wonderful congressman, many of us were very disappointed when he resigned, but he went home to run for governor in the state of Idaho, but he was beat by Lieutenant Governor Brad, who was already in office. So that's kind of sad. It's a huge loss because Raul Labrador, again, was a champion in the House. In the Pennsylvania GOP gubernatorial race, we talked about Scott Wagner yesterday being supported in part by Tom Steyer, who was the LGBT activist. And yet Scott Wagner is the Republican who's been presenting himself as a conservative. Many people feel like that's a deception. But he beat Paul Mango. Scott Wagner beat Paul Mango. Now it's off the screen. 44% to 36%, something like that. So that's what happened in Pennsylvania yesterday. All right, can we have some fun? Do we? You know, we never get to have fun, so let's have some. You hear this on AFR Talk all the time. At least you have. And this caused me to go out and buy them, so let's listen.
Oh, yeah. Did I mention the swinging pendulums of doom?
Great. Target acquired.
Wait!
It's 1,000,000 degrees in here. What am I supposed to do, roast marshmallows?
I mean it. Don't move.
Got it.
Okay. All right. Well, that was interesting. That, in case you didn't recognize it, that was the voice of Ryan DeFreitas, that secret agent. And I know all about this. I've seen every one that's been produced so far because I love the commercials so much for these that I bought them for my grandchildren, my grandson 9, my granddaughter 6, and then a 4-year-old. And they loved them. We just watched them in St. Andrews, Scotland. And so I'm really delighted to have Kendra White with us today because Kendra, along with her brother Jeremy, are the producers and creators of Ryan DeFreitas. And Kendra joins me this morning because there's kind of a new thing going on. Kendra, thanks for joining me.
Good morning. I'm so excited to see that you have watched Ryan DeFreitas. What an honor.
Kendra, I love them. I really do. I bought them the first set. And then when the second set came out, I just carried them over myself just a month or so ago. But you know what? People still, you know, some people haven't ordered them. So I have to ask you, why don't you explain? What's the premise with Ryan DeFreitas?
Sure. Well, American Family Association wanted to create something that was just safe for families. You know, there's a lot of Christian films that come out that are targeted for the whole family, but we wanted something that kids particularly could really get behind. And there's just so much trash out there, and there really is an agenda, even targeting children's entertainment right now, that is just really from the enemy. And so we wanted something that Christian families could feel safe and would actually have a positive message. So we started creating Ryan DeFreitas' secret agent. He is this super arrogant spy who thinks he knows everything. And he ends up getting partnered with someone who is not a secret agent, but she is very wise, and that person is his mom. And she goes on all of these missions with him and ends up, usually she's the one that ends up saving the day, and they learn a lesson along the way. There's a biblical wrap-up at the end of each episode that kind of applies to the lesson that's learned, that Ryan learns along the way.
You know what? And it's so cute. And it is so clever, Kendra. Honestly, it makes me laugh. I mean, they are really so well done, and I'm really grateful to you and your brother for developing these for my own kids.
We wanted it to be fun for parents as well, because you know they're the ones that listen to it as well again and again and again. And if it's just really annoying, they're not going to want to buy it. So that was one of the things that Jeremy and I, when we were creating it, we said, this has got to be fun for the whole family. And, you know, there are jokes that parents, I think, appreciate as well. I mean, obviously appropriate, but...
Kendra, you know what? I have to say, cartoons like from decades ago when they first started are actually very clever and funny. And I find when I've tried to sit through cartoons now with my kids, they're just so stupid. And also, as you said, they are so carefully crafted to mold their minds. It drives me insane. I can't stand it.
Right. Disney Channel alone in the last year, in 2017, had about five or six firsts that the LGBT community is celebrating. First kiss between a gay couple. First character who is a child who comes out as gay on Disney Channel show. I'm talking about a main character. And that influences their minds. And for parents, they don't know when something like that is going to pop up in the episode. It's a show that otherwise might seem very harmless, and those things creep in, and parents then have to have conversations that they weren't prepared to deal with.
Well, or they don't see them at all. They don't see them at all because they're in the other room working while their kids are watching cartoons. You can't do that anymore.
Right.
You can't do that anymore. I think one of the themes that disturbs me, and this is very politically incorrect, but the girl power thing drives me crazy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's some shows that are specifically targeted around the feminism, you know, agenda. And, you know, there's so many things. There's the way parents are treated in cartoons today.
Yes.
The dad is always the buffoon. You know, he is just the bumbling idiot. And moms often are learning lessons from their children, and maybe I need to pause and learn a lesson from my kid, and you know that's completely contrary to scripture, which says that parents have a specific role in your children's lives to be the ones who grow and instruct them in the Lord. And you know, we by no means, Deb DeFrades is not a perfect character; she makes mistakes along the way as well. But we've really tried to guard the fact that that role is sacred, and that, never to present her in a completely foolish way.
Well, he does respect her. You know, he doesn't want her help necessarily, but he does respect his mom. You know, the point I actually did not complete that I do want to make is that kids are not stupid, and they are drawn to intellectually sound content.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just because they're little doesn't mean they need stupid things. And I have to say, you know, when I was a kid, one of my favorite cartoons was Fractured Fairy Tales.
Yes, I saw those. My mom had a copy.
We found some on YouTube, I guess, or someplace for the kids, and I still laugh because they're very, very clever.
Right.
And so all that to say, I think Ryan DeFrades is very clever.
Themes are complex too, because kids are able to, they're able to get it. I know we have one episode, episode 5 is all about joy versus happiness. And Ryan is processing some very real disappointment of some things that have gone on in his family that have really hurt their family. And it's the difference between, you know, happiness is an emotion, but joy is a fruit of the Spirit that we can have on our worst day when we're connected to Christ. And I think kids can get that. You know, God breaks down the gospel there's not an IQ limit on understanding the deep things of God. If your heart is sensitive, you can get it.
I think that's totally true. And let me get practical here for a second, because if you're wondering why we're talking about this, because I would like for each of you, if you have a child in your life, a niece or a nephew, a child, a grandchild, your neighbor, this is just such a cute series, and it will be so beneficial to whatever child watches it, because it causes them to think higher thoughts, more noble things, and have fun in the process.
Sure.
You can get it at the AFA store, afastore.net, afastore.net. You can order it. And you have some new episodes?
We do. So episodes 4, 5, and 6, they were released earlier this year, but we really have not had a chance to talk about it on the radio and let all of our listeners know. We do also have a coloring contest right now. If you'd like to win one of those episodes for free, You can go on Facebook to Ryan Secret Agent, and we'll have information about how you can download those coloring sheets and just send us a picture on Facebook, and you too might win Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
Okay, well, that's good to know. I did not know. A coloring contest. Okay.
Yes, and there's actually some really great resources on the website for Ryan for parents. If you've already purchased the episodes, we have a discussion guide for your family. If you want to continue the dialogue about the topics introduced in each episode, it's a free, and for every single episode, included with the Bible story, we'll have a picture of the Bible story and a sheet with questions that, you know, say it's on joy. You talk about, well, what do you do when you're having the worst day of your life? You know, what do you do when that sadness starts to press in? And it kind of is designed to get families talking about these things.
You know what? I just had a thought, Kendra.
Yes.
like if I were younger and my kids were smaller, I could almost see having the neighborhood kids over.
A mini little VBS in your living room.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. No, seriously. Would that be a great outreach?
Well,
ask their moms to come too.
I've heard of several people using this series to reach out to unsaved neighbors and friends because it's an easy way to kind of navigate into those conversations. And sometimes you don't even have to steer the conversation. You just put it on and they enjoy it because it's funny. And then they have questions afterwards. It stirs their hearts to ask about those things.
AFAstore.net, AFAstore.net. Kendra, we only have a few seconds left. I just have some practical questions.
Sure.
How in the world did you cast your voices? Did you guys audition people, or where did you get them?
We work with Cat in the Mill Studios in Texas, and there's a great talent pool in the Texas area. We have auditions every time we have new episodes. We have new characters. So if you're in the Texas area and would like to audition, connect with us. But there's some wonderful actors that we've voice actors we've worked with. And in the Tupelo area, a lot of the smaller parts, we look for volunteers for one-liners and screams. And we've had a lot of AFA employees, family members come in. I say, you're being chased by a giant robotic spider. Can you scream for me? You know, so we try to save money where we can on those kinds of things.
Kendra, are you and your brother writing all these episodes?
We do, yes. My brother is a children's pastor in Texas, actually, and so he's great at having that interactivity of knowing what kind of things kids are into these days, and we've written every single episode. There's going to be 13 in the series, and we work hand in hand on those.
All right, so he knows the kids because he's doing
children's ministry every day.
All right, so yes. How about you? What is your strength in this party?
Well, writing is really a gift that I feel that the Lord has given me. I love story structure, and I love taking a spiritual theme and wrapping the story around that theme to communicate that message. And we really pick each spiritual message based on what we think kids today are facing. So for instance, episode 2 is all about technology and how we can really grieve the heart of God when we disrespect each other by just being on our phones and not, you know, we tune out the world around us, and that's not the way that God designed it. You know, so that was just something that was like my soapbox, you know, it was on my heart to communicate that to the next generation. And so I said, we're going to write a story around it, a video game that starts brainwashing people, and Ryan and his mom have to sneak in and unplug the game.
Yeah, and so, you know, and even though it sounds very serious when we talk about it that way, this is so much fun. This series is so much fun. And at the same time as teaching your kids. So I think you ought to get it. Go to AFAstore.net, AFAstore.net, and get Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. You won't be sorry. You will enjoy it so much. Kendra White, thank you. Producer
for
American
time.
Family Studios, and your brother Jeremy. Our thanks to him too, Kendra, for this great offering to the Christian community. And also, I think more than just Christians will enjoy this. Who knows what the fruits of this will be. Kendra White, thank you. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.